For 12 years past, ever since the Communist armies conquered the Chinese mainland and the Republic of China relocated its government in Taipei, the community of nations has been confronted with a whole set of profoundly vexing problems. Most of them have arisen from aggressive military actions by the Chinese communists against Korea, against the government of the Republic of China on its island refuge, against Tibet, against South and Southeast Asia. The problem before us, in its simplest terms, is this. The authorities who have carried out these aggressive actions, who have for 12 years been in continuous and violent defiance of the principles of the United Nations and of the resolutions of the General Assembly, and deaf to the restraining pleas of law-abiding members, these same warlike authorities claim the right to occupy the seat of China here and demand that we eject from the United Nations the representatives of the Republic of China. I realize that we have sometimes been charged with unrealism and with ignoring the existence of 600 million people, to quote a quote familiar phrases. But this, it seems to us, is a strange charge indeed. My country's soldiers fought with other soldiers of the United Nations in Korea for nearly 3 years against a huge invading army from the mainland of China. My country's negotiators have done their best for nearly 10 years at Panmunjom, at Geneva, at Warsaw, to negotiate with the emissaries of Peking. Almost no country, I dare say, is more aware of their existence than mine. I think it could be said with more justice that it would be dangerously unrealistic if this assembly were to bow to the demands of Peking to expel and replace the Republic of China in the United Nations. It would be ignoring the warlike character, the aggressive behavior of the rulers who dominate 600 million people and who talk of the inevitability of war as an article of faith and who refuse to renounce the use of force. Into the international sphere, these leaders have carried the same qualities of arrogance, of regimentation, of aggression. Many people hoped, after their invasion of Korea ended, that they would thereupon give up the idea of foreign conquest. Instead, they sponsored and supplied the communizing of North Vietnam. They resumed their warlike threats against Taiwan. They launched a campaign of armed conquest to end the autonomy of Tibet. And all along their southern borders, they have pressed forward into new territory. To this day, in a fashion recalling the early authoritarian emperors of China, they pursue all of these policies and, in addition, seek to use the millions of Chinese residing abroad as agents of their political designs. With such a record and such a philosophy of violence and of fanaticism, no wonder this regime, after 12 years, still has no diplomatic relations with almost two-thirds of the governments of the world. One cannot help wondering what the representatives of such a predatory regime would contribute in our United Nations councils to the solutions of the many dangerous questions which confront us. I believe these facts are enough, Mr. President, to show how markedly Communist China has deviated from the pattern of progress and of peace embodied in our charter and towards which the community of nations is striving. In its present mood, it is a massive and a brutal threat to man's struggle to better his lot in his own way, and even perhaps to man's very survival. Its gigantic power, its reckless ambition, its unconcern for human values make it the major world problem.